Okay. Morning. Today's daf in Sukkah, daf Mem Aleph. We're back on Mem Amud Beis. We are finishing up our Shemitah discussion for today, and then we will move on to discuss more general topics regarding the Lulav. First of all, thanks to the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. The daf will be learned. L'zecher Nishmas Lewis, Lois Zalman Lupin. We are on the, we just turned the page yesterday, and we are on the very top of the Amud. And here's our discussion. Our discussion is the following. The Mishnah told us to don't buy the Esrog from the Amaretz during the Shemitah year. And the reason why is because the Esrog itself has Kedushas Shvius. And so therefore, in turn, you buy the Esrog from the Amaretz. So basically, there's going to be a transfer. There's going to be an exchange. The money, the word exchange is not, as we talked yesterday, the word exchange is not really the most appropriate way to say it, but in other words, the Kedusha of the Peir Shvius is going to go into the money, and therefore, what the Amaretz is now going to be holding in his hand is going to be holding money which has Kedushas Shvius. The problem is, the Amaretz doesn't know what to do. Well, what are you supposed to do with money that has Kedushas Shvius? So there are two basic restrictions. Number one, in terms of how to consume it, we're not going to eat the money, obviously, but you have to buy with that money food that you're going to eat. You cannot use it for investment purposes. You cannot put it for any type, but you can't buy any type of durable good. You can't put it away for long term, and it has to be food, and also it has to be consumed by the time of Zman Biur. The Amaretz is not familiar with this, he doesn't know this, and therefore you're going to be basically a michshol. You're going to be putting a stumbling block in front of him. In fact, Rashi on the Mishnah said that that's basically the problem. The problem is, lifnever lo siten michshol. You're going to be giving him money, and he doesn't know what to do with it. So the Mishnah said, therefore, so try to get him to give it to you as a gift. And if that doesn't work, so as we learned in the Gemara, so don't give it to you as a gift, but okay, fine, havla'ah, spend a little bit extra on the lulav, and he'll understand that the extra cost is obviously going for the esrog as well. Okay, our big discussion that we encountered yesterday is, why are we talking about the esrog? Why are we not talking about the lulav? Why by the lulav is there not going to be an issue of demei or kedusha shvius? So that was yesterday's question, and basically we attacked this question from the following standpoint. Number one, we pointed out yesterday that the points of demarcation, what year is the esrog going to be attached to and what year the lulav is going to be attached to, are going to be based on different criteria. When it comes to the esrog, we go basa l'kita, we go when the time the esrog is actually plucked off the tree. So we're talking about sukkahs of the year of Shemitah, so that means that we are only 15 days into the Shemitah year. So probably we pluck the esrog just now. So the esrog is connected to this year, meaning the Shemitah year. The lulav of this year, however, let's even suggest that we cut it off the tree like a week ago, right? Sometime from when the new year began. But the lulav, however, follows last year. And the reason why is because the lulav is a tree, and a tree follows basar chanata. It goes after the time that it blossoms, and not from the time that you pluck it off the tree. Why is the esrog does not follow the halachas like a tree? So we discussed that a little bit yesterday. The esrog has a quality in which it's vegetable like. It grows on all waters. It doesn't just grow on rainwater. You can irrigate it as well. It behaves like a vegetable. So therefore, in terms of its criteria, so it's treated like a vegetable. And then yesterday we had a technical discussion. We find a lot of Tanayim don't agree. A lot of Tanayim are of the opinion that the esrog is a tree, legabe shvius. But the Gemara pointed out, okay, there are a lot of Tanayim who hold that. But we do find a Tana who says that an esrog vis-a-vis shvius follows the halachas of a vegetable, not of a tree. Okay, then the Gemara yesterday, there's just one more point that we have to review. Then the Gemara says, I don't understand, we're not talking about a fruit. We're talking about a branch. Are branches wood? Is that subject to the halachas of shvius? And the Gemara says basically, yeah, it is. Meaning as long, the criteria for what is subject to shvius, to kedusha shvius, is not, the distinction is not between food versus non-food, it's another distinction. What's the distinction? So the Gemara yesterday said, it's actually a machlokas amongst the Tanaim, but the basic position is as long as biuro vehanah shaveh, as long as its destruction and consumption are occurring concurrently, the prime example of that, of course, is eating. When I eat something, I'm benefiting and destroying the item at the same time. So if as long as those two events are occurring concurrently, so then that item is subject to Kedusha Shvius. If the two events are not occurring concurrently, so then it's not subject to Kedusha Shvius. So to talk out the extremes, if we're talking about a food, a fruit, a vegetable, that's subject to Kedusha Shvius, because it's Hana and Bir occurring concurrently. The act of eating is both destructive and you're getting benefit at the same time. firewood, the Gemara pointed out yesterday, that is not subject to Kedusha Shvias. Why not? Because I burn it first, and then I cook on top of it. Meaning first I turn it into coals, and then I cook on top of it. So the destruction and the Hana are not occurring concurrently, and so therefore it's not subject to Kedusha Shvias. What about the Lulav branch? So the Lulav branch, the Gemara said yesterday, actually the Gemara didn't say this, Rashi said this, the Lulav branch, the Biur and the Hana are occurring concurrently, because when I'm sweeping, so I'm destroying the branch, and at the time I'm destroying the branch, I'm getting benefit from the broom. So it is occurring concurrently, and therefore the Lulav is subject to Kedusha Shvias. Good, Adkan. Now one other point. There is another Tana that we saw yesterday, Rav Yossi specifically, who actually includes many things within Kedusha Shvias. He says that as long as you're getting any benefit from it whatsoever, as long as it's a benefit derived by everybody, and it's not a limited or specific benefit, so then it's subject to Kedusha Shvias. That is the opinion of Rav Yossi. We saw Rav Yossi yesterday. We'll see a little bit more of it today. We're on the very top of Mem Amud Beis. Tanra Man, Tanra Lahad, Tanra Rabban. 3 lines from the very top on Mem Amud Beis, and we're continuing. La'ach, la'vala l'malug malach, ma'vala l'zil of lach, la'vala l'asos mimen afiktiv zin. So the Braisa says that during the Shemitah year, you can eat it. You can eat it, and the only thing you're restricted from doing with it is, I can't use it for malugma. You remember yesterday, malugma was some sort of therapeutic application of the food, some sort of plaster, or la'achla v'lo l'zilof, or sprinkling the wine in your house to make your house smell nicer. It was not done by everybody. This was done by just a few people. La'achla v'lo l'asos mimenu afiktiv zin. Afiktiv zin is a like epicac. It basically what an induced vomiting. So take a look at Rashi. Rashi actually gives a graphic description of the word afiktiv zin, right? There's an actual contraction of 3 words. But let's move. So keman ki Rabbi Yossi. So again, the author of that braisa is Rabbi Yossi, because Rabbi Yossi has the most expansive understanding of what you can do with Peir Shvias. What you can do with Peir Shvias is basically, as long as everyone gets benefit from it, even if the benefit and the destruction are not occurring concurrently, that's something that you can do with Peir Shvias. Rabbanan ha'ikanami mishru kavusa, because if we were holding like the Chachamim said, I can't launder and I can't soak using Peir Shvias, right? We talked yesterday about basically soaking the flax in wine. Okay, softens the flax. I don't know enough to explain this, but anyway, soaking the flax in wine. The wine becomes destroyed pretty much immediately, and the benefit doesn't come until later on when you actually put the flax on, when you're actually wearing the linen. So there, Hana and Bir are not occurring concurrently, and that's no good. In other words, according to the Tanna Kamma, they have to be occurring concurrently. I'm Rav Elazar Ein. Okay, good. Adkan, period. That ends that discussion. So now we are almost out of the discussion of Kedusha Shvias. Okay. From this point going forward, until basically the Mishnah, we are now going to analyze one aspect of Kedusha Shvias. Okay, we've said this already a number of times, but now the Gemara is going to say it actually inside, and we get to see this inside. When I have actual Peir Shvias, so let's say I have grapes, right, which has Kedusha Shvias, grew on the vine during the Shemitah year. I pull it off the vine, and now I have grapes with Kedusha Shvias. Okay, what did we say yesterday and the day before, and we'll say it today as well, is that now if I were to barter that, if I were to exchange it with somebody else, let's say I exchange it with money, with somebody else. Good, so I give him the grapes, he gives me the money. The money now will be injected with Kedusha Shvias. All the regulations and restrictions that apply to the payros apply to the money as well. Then in turn, if I take that money and I buy food with that money, that food will also be injected with all the restrictions. There is a difference between, let's call the original grapes A, let's call the money B, and let's call that third purchase C. There's a difference between the transfer of A to B than B to C. And we pointed this out yesterday. When I'm transferring from A to B, A still retains its Kedusha. So the original grapes always will retain its Kedusha. B will absorb on top of that also the Kedusha as well. Ben pointed out yesterday, it was a great analogy. It's like Temura. Right, just like the parsha and the Masechta of Temura, where I do an exchange, but the original animal also remains kadosh. But then after that point in time, meaning any transfer after that, when I go from B to C, so I'm taking the money now and I'm buying food, so there is a full transfer of kedusha, where the kedusha goes from B to C. So if the money now is exchanged for any other food, the food will have the kedusha shvius, the money loses its kedusha. Okay? We've been saying that time and again. Now, what's our discussion now? So let's see it inside. I'm a Rebbe Eliezer. Ein shvius meschala lasala derech mekach. Do you want to know how to be mechalal? How to deconsecrate? Only al yedei mekach. That's only with a purchase. In other words, but not through what's called standard chilul. Meaning, you have Maaser Sheni in your house. Okay, I know outside of Eretz Yisrael we don't do this. In Eretz Yisrael, so people do this. People have money in their house. And in the event, in other words, the assumption is that when you buy fruit, so the seller already took off Trumas and Maasers. Okay, some people in Eretz Yisrael, just as a cautionary, so they have money and they transfer the Kedusha from the Maaser Sheni onto the money. Okay, but anyway. So when you transfer Kedusha from Maaser Sheni onto money, so it doesn't have to be an exchange, it doesn't have to be a purchase. In other words, you could be the owner of the money, and you'll just simply point to the food, the Maaser Sheni, and say, I want the Kedusha to go from the food to the money. That's called chilul. That's just regular deconsecration. What Rabbi Eliezer is saying is, that doesn't work by Perish Shvius, by Kedusha Shvius. By Kedusha Shvius, the only way the Kedusha will transfer is only through a purchase. Only through a mekach, meaning I need two parties involved. I need one party with the actual pair of shvius. I need the other party with the money. There has to be an exchange. Then and only then is there a transfer. But if I own the pair of shvius and I own the money, I can't just simply transfer the kedusha from the food to the money. That's Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. And Rabbi Yochanan Amar, bein derech mekach, bein derech chilul. And Rabbi Yochanan says, no, it works like any other chilul. The Kedusha transfers through a transaction, and the Kedusha transfers even if I'm just one individual who is both owning the money and the Perish Shvius, I could be Mechalom. So basically what Rav Yochanan is saying is that Kedusha Shvius is like any other Kedusha, where I, as long as it's redeemable, like my Maaser Sheni, as long as it's redeemable, I could do the transfer of Kedusha even onto my own money. Now, why? The obvious question. My time at the Rebbe Elazar. Rebbe Elazar is a harder position to understand, meaning that Perish Shvius has this unique halacha that it only is transferred on a transaction between two parties. Why should that be? So he quotes a brisa. First he quotes a pasuk. Bishnasa Yovel Hazos. So the pasuk says, in the year of Yovel, this is Parshas Bahar, end of Sefer Vayikra. V'smichle v'chisimkaru memkar. So Yovel, now Rashi points out, Yovel and Shemitah are synonymous. Meaning whatever halachas are true by Yovel are true by Shemitah, and vice versa. Meaning all the sanctification of the produce of the land is true, Shemitah and Yovel. So Bishnat Yovel Hazos, and then next to it, the next pasuk, V'chisim kru memkar. And when a person sells, so derech mekach v'lo derech chilul. So in other words, basically what the Torah is telling you is, how is the transfer accomplished? How does the Kedusha go from one to another? Only derech mekach, only through a transaction. Rav Yochanan, my time, dechsiv, ki yovel hi kodesh. And Rav Yochanan says, no, what are you talking about? Ki yovel hi kodesh, yovel is kodesh, meaning it behaves like a regular Kedusha. Like regular kodesh, ma kodesh bein derech mekach, bein derech chilul. Ashvius ma bein derech mekach, bein derech chilul. Good. So we have a very basic machlokus between the Amoraim in terms of how the kedusha perishvius transfers from one to another. Rabbi Eliezer says only through a transaction, because the smichus are parshios, and Rabbi Yochanan says no, either through mekach or through chilul. It could work either way. Rav Yochanan, Haiki Simkaru Memkar Mayavidle. So now, obviously, we play now the classic back and forth of what does one do with the other's psukim. So according to Rav Yochanan, what does he do with the psukim of Kisimkaru? So Rav Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, Detanya. So the Gemara says, no, we have another drasha. We learn another point from those psukim. We learned in the Braisa, Am Rav Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, Barei, Kamakasha, Avkal, Shoshviz. How difficult is it to be involved in the prohibition, meaning not treating Perish Shvius with its proper sanctity. Now, it's interesting, Rashi notes that the term over here is Avka Shel Shvias, literally the dust of Shemitah, meaning we're not talking about the most basic prohibitions of Shemitah, which would be working the field, not letting it fallow, but we're talking about using the produce as commerce. Now, the Torah prohibits that. But here, Rashi points out, it's just called Avka Shel Shvias simply because we're not talking about the main prohibitions in the Torah. But anyway, Adam Nosev Nosem Beperos, a person does any type of commercial activity with the Peros Shvias. So Beperos Shvias, the Sof Mochers Metaltalav Veskelav. So the next thing that's going to happen, and basically what the Gemara is doing is, just read on in the Parsha. Meaning, if you do commercial activity with Peros Shvias, so then you're going to become impoverished, and you're going to have to sell all of your assets. Okay, so in other words, basically, the Torah is telling you, don't do it, and there will be a consequence if you do commercial activity with Peros Shvias. Shenamar, and then we just go through the Smichos Parshos, Bishnasa Yovel Azos Kashuva Isha Lachuzaso, Usmich Le, right after the Torah tells us about Yovel, and again, Yovel Shmita, same basic point, V'chisimkru Memkar Lamisecha, if you sell something to your friend. So the Gemara's understanding is, why are you selling it to your friend? Because you did commercial activity with Shemitah, so therefore you're gonna end up become impoverished and have to sell off your assets. Okay, that's what Rabbi Yochanan is doing with the psukim, and not the point of that the only way to be mechalal is through a transaction. Rabbi Lazar, hi, Rabbi Yochanan, my avidlei. Now, what is Rabbi Yochanan? Sorry, yeah. What does Rabbi Eliezer do with the Pesukim of Yochanan? So the Gemara says, for that, he also uses the Pesukim. Ki yovel hi kodesh, ma kodesh tofes es damav, av shvias tofeses es damer. The basic idea that whatever value is exchanged for the produce will take on the kedusha of the produce. Now, Tanya Kavase de Rabbi Eliezer, Tanya Kavase de Rabbi Yochanan. Okay? Within this machlokus between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan, the Gemara just simply says that we have braises supporting each position. Tanya Kavase de Rabbi Eliezer, Shvias Tofeses es Damesh and Emerki Yovali Kodesh, Yelachem, Makodesh Tofeses Damav Asur, Av Shvi Tofeses es Dameha, Ve Asura. So just like Kodesh, what happens when I take money and transfer it with Kedusha? The money takes on the Kedusha. So too by Shvias, same story. When I take Shvias and I transfer with money, the money takes on the Kedusha Shvias. Ima Kodesh Tofes Dama V'yotze L'chulen. Ashvi Tofeses Dama V'yotze L'chulen. Now remember, we're now describing the A-B transaction. So in the A-B transaction, so generally, when there's a transaction of A and B, and A was Kadosh, and I transferred it for money, B's Kodesh, and A loses its Kedusha. That's not true when it comes to Shemitah. Why not? Tamalomer, Tia. Because the Torah says Tia. Tia means it's in a state of being. To behave Yaso Tehei. Ha Ketzad. So now this Brisa spells it out. Lakach be Perishvias Basar. So let's say I have Perishvias, and what do I buy with it? I buy with it meat. Elu ve'elu mizbarim b'shvias. So in other words, I did a barter. I had the original pair of shvias, we're going to call that A, and I exchange it for meat. Meat in this case is going to be B. Good. They both have to be destroyed when we get to Zman Biur. Okay, the time where it's no longer out in the field. Both the produce and the meat. The meat absorbs the kedusha, but the produce does not lose the kedusha. Lakach bebasar dagim. Now let's say after I now have the meat in my hand with the kedusha shvias, I do another barter. I exchange the meat for fish. Yatsa basar benichnasu dagim. Meat no longer has kedusha, the fish does. That's the BC. So when I'm doing a transfer between B and C, B loses the kedusha, C obtains the kedusha. Lakach b'dagin yayin yatsu dagin v'nechnas yayin, and then the Brisa just simply spells it out. Any transfer after that is a full transfer of kedusha. So it goes from the wine from the fish to the wine. Lakach b'yayin shemen yatsu yayin v'nechnas shemen, and then if you do another transfer, it would go from the wine to the oil. The Gemara is just quoting this Brisa to prove the point that that Rabbi Eliezer is right, that the only way it works is through a transaction. And not through chilam. Ha ketzad achronachron nechnas b'shvias upriatzma aser. So mi diktani, here the Gemara makes the point. Mi diktani lakach lakach. Now did you see the brisa? Every time it illustrates an example, it says lakach. Right, it doesn't say chilal. Because by Shvius, the only way to transfer is only Derech Mekach. It's only with a transaction of two parties involved. Ama Derech Mekach and Derech Hilolo. Good. That's a brisa that supported Rabbi Eliezer. Now, let's see a brisa that supports Rabbi Yochanan. Tanya Kavasa de Rabbi Yochanan Echad Shvius Vechad Maestro Shenim Eschal Behema. Chaya Va'of Ben Chayin Ben Shchutin Divra Rabbi Meir. So, Shemitah Maestro Sheni are deconsecrated. See the word that's used? Deconsecrated on Behema Chaya Va'of, whether they're alive or whether they're dead. Divra Rabbi Meir. That's Rabbi Meir's position. V'chacham Emormim Ashchutin Eschal Chayin Ein Mischalalin. Don't deconsecrate your Kedusha Shvius onto live animals. Why not? Meaning, it's an animal. We're going to end up eating it anyway. The problem is, that the Gemara, because when they're live, so animals tend to procreate. And the problem now is that you'll have a proliferation of Kedusha Shvius. So don't do it. Don't deconsecrate it onto live animals, says the Chachamim, but rather only on Shechuta, only on Shechted animals, and therefore you will have no problem of proliferation of Kedusha Shvius. But anyway, what did you see in that Braisa? Mischala, deconsecration. That the way that Kedusha Shvius behaves is like any other Kodesh, where it doesn't need to be transaction. If I own the Kedusha, if I own the pair of Shvius, and I own the money, I could just simply deconsecrate from the Shvius right onto my own money. Good. So we have a brisa supporting Rav Yochanan. Now, Amar Rav, now the Gemara just spends a moment spending a little bit of time to describing the proliferation of the Kedusha. Amar Rav, Machlokas B'Zacharim. Yes, there's a debate between Rabbi Meir and the Tanakama, but that's only regarding male animals. Avah B'Nakevos, but female animals, Divrei HaKol, Ashchutim Mischalin, Achayinim Mischalin, Gzeres Shemigad, Mehem Adarim. Female animals, don't do it. Meaning everyone agrees don't do it. Because by female animals, There's obviously a higher chance of proliferation, as she is obviously the one who is going to be the one getting pregnant, having children. So therefore, don't do it. Don't deconsecrate your pair of shvius onto a female animal, because there everyone agrees, both Rav Meir and the Chachamim, that there's a concern that there will just simply be a proliferation of Kedusha Shvius. Amar Rav Ashi. Okay, so far so good. Almost an amud of Gemara dedicated to one issue. How do you deconsecrate the Kedusha Shvius from the fruit of Shemitah? So again, according to Rav Yochanan, it behaves like regular Kodesh, either through a transaction or through deconsecration. The difference is, transaction has two parties involved, deconsecration, only you could do it yourself. You could do it from your pair of Shvius to your money. That's Rav Yochanan. Rabbi Eliezer disagrees. The Amora. Rabbi Elazar disagrees, and Rabbi Elazar says no. The only way that you can transfer the Kedusha is only through Mekach, only through a transaction. Okay, we went back and forth in terms of the sources. We quoted Brisa supporting each position, and now Amar Rav Ashi. What Rav Ashi is going to do is he's going to try to limit, modify, define the machlokas between these Amarayim. Amar Rav Ashi, we're on the top of Mem Aleph and Mem Aleph, three lines down. Machlokas bepri rishon, aval bepri sheni divrei hakol, bein derech mekach, bein derech hil. Rav Ashi says, yes, there's a debate between Rabbi Elazar and Rav Yochanan, but that's only from A to B. After A to B, any transaction after that, so it can be done either through mekach or through hil. Now, why? So, v'hadiktani lakach lakach. Well, I'm sorry, I asked the wrong question. It's not the wrong question. It's just not the right time to ask the question. What about the brisa? Remember that brisa we saw just a couple of minutes ago? The brisa said, and the meat was sold for fish, and the fish was sold for wine, and the wine was sold for oil. That's all transactions, even though we're well past the A-B point. So I did the Tana Reisha Lakach, Tana Nami Seifa Lakach. So the Gemara says, oh, that's symmetry. And we've seen this time and again. Meaning, I only need a Mekach on the A-B point. And then, you're right, after that, it doesn't have to be Mekach, it can be Mischalal. But look, we started off by Mekach, so we're staying with Mekach. So Ravina says to Ravashi, I don't know if you're right. I don't think you're right. Meaning, look, there's a machlokes between Rebbe Elazar and Rebbe Yochanan. And you're saying that that whole machlokes is only on that first transaction, the A to B. But from that point going forward, Bein Mekach, Bein Chelo. I don't think you're right. Why not? Because look at the following braisa. Let's say a person has in his house money. Selah Shel Shvias. Now that has to be B. Right? You understand? That can't be A. A has to be the original produce. So if we're talking about a Selah by definition has to be at least B. Could be C, could be D, but it has to be at least B. Ubikesh Likech Bo Chaluk. And let's say I have money of Shvias in my possession, and I want to buy a shirt. Okay, accountants, listen up. You're going to love this. Okay, this is going to excite you. So basically, money laundering. And I don't mean it. I mean it with no cynicism whatsoever. None. In other words, but basically, is there a way to circumvent the issue? What's the issue?
Like food.
Right. In other words, correct. The only thing I could do with that money that has Kedusha Shvi'is is the only I could buy food. And I have to eat the food. I can't buy a shirt. The shirt is a durable good. You can't do that. So how do I do it? Meaning I know you can do it. Good. But how do I do it? So here's how it goes. So Kate said Yasa. So here's what you'll do. Yelech etzel chenvani haragel etzlo. So go to your local tailor, your local shirt seller, somebody who you know well. And basically you're going to say to him, trust me on this one. Okay? And v'omer lo, tainli besela peros. Here's what we'll do. I have money. And I know, look, the end game, of course, is I want to buy a shirt from you. But right now, give me fruit. Okay? Your lunch, perfect. Let me buy your lunch off of you. So give me food, and I'll give you the money. But no saying low. And so now a transaction has occurred, where I gave him the money, and he sold me his lunch. Now, v'choz v'omer lo hare peiros halalu nesunim lach b'matana. V'omer lo halacha sela zu b'matana. And now what we'll do is, we'll give it back to each other, but not as a transaction, but as a gift. So in other words, you give me back now my money as a gift, and I'll give you back your lunch now as a gift. Now, Ben already figured it out, the lunch now has Kedusha Shvias. So understand that the seller of the shirt did, I don't want to say he lost out, that's not the right way to say it, but now he is subject to restriction. Whereas originally where that lunch did not have Kedusha Shvias, now the lunch that he sold does have Kedusha Shvias. So yes, he's taking a bit of a hit, but now the money just got right, deconsecrated. The money now is free and clear. Now you want to take the money, use it to buy a shirt, by all means, now you could do so. Okay, so far so good. That's the way, that's our money laundering of the day. Okay, good. Now, but you understand. In other words, it has to be done that way because I can't take the money and I can't buy the shirt with the money.
But there's no issue that the storekeeper is getting some kind of hana. It's implied hana that is going to get.
Correct, correct. There is a fringe benefit. Absolutely. Absolutely. The only. You're correct, correct. Correct. But, okay. But it works. The hacha depreciatehu. Now. Which point of the transaction are we talking about? Pre-sheni. Meaning, again, we're starting with the money. If we're starting with the money, so this is not an A-B transaction. This is a B-C transaction. We're starting with the money. And the katani derech mekach and derech ilalau. And isn't it strange? Meaning, why are we doing this unusual legal transaction? I'll sell you. You'll sell me your lunch. In other words, now, why not have the guy who wants to buy a shirt so badly simply deconsecrate the money to his own food? Why not do that? It must be that the author of this brisa, or whoever the author of this brisa is of the opinion that Mecca can only be done from the BC transaction. Sorry. Deconsecration can only be done through a transaction on the BC. So, Elam, Ravashi, Machlokus, be pre-sheni. So now the Gemara says, you know what, Ravashi? You are disproven. Remember, what was Rav Ashi's point? That there's no machlokas by the pre-Sheni. In the BC transaction, you can either do it derech chilu, you can do it derech mekach. Rav Ashi says, okay, you know what? After learning this braisa, I modify my view. I change my view. So, Elam Rav Ashi, machlokas b'pre-Sheni, ava b'pre-Rishon, divrei alkol derech mekach, in derech chilu lo. So Rav Ashi says, okay, I'm going to give it to you. That on the AB, the only way to transfer the Kedusha is via transaction with two parties involved. That point going forward, now we have a machlokes between Rav Yochanan and Rebbe Lazar. So the Gemara says, yeah, but I'm bothered by the following. We have a Braisa, and the Braisa says, both by Meister Sheni and by Shvius. So the Gemara says, my Shvius de Mei Shvius. So the Gemara says, no, Shvius over there means de Mei Shvius. Dilo te mahachi Meister, Meister Mamish, Vaksiva tzarta kasa biyadecha. Because Meister Sheni, I can't, in other words, Meister Sheni has to transfer the money. The Torah says, Vitzarta hakesef biyadecha. So the Meister Sheni being described in this price is talking about money that was transferred for Meister Sheni. Same thing by Shvius. Shvius is talking about money that was transferred for Shvius. Ela demei meister hachanami demei Shvius. Good. So that's how we deal. That's how we dealt with the Braisa. The Braisa is not difficult. Quick summary. We now have gone through the entire sugya of Shvius, perhaps one of the more difficult discussions that have occurred in the third parak of Sukkah. But basically, Esrog subject to Shvius, Lulav also subject to Shvius. Interestingly enough. That's the Gemara's conclusion. The only reason why the Mishnah is talking about the Esrog and not the Lulav is because they follow different years. Esrog follows Lakita according to our Mishnah, although we did see Tanaim argue with that. The Esrog follows Lakita, therefore the Esrog that I pluck this year is subject to this year's law, and if this year is Shemitah, subject to Shemitah. Lulav follows Chanata, the regular tree halacha, which is that it follows the time that it buds. It budded during the sixth year, therefore it's the sixth year. When does Shemitah apply? To anything where the consumption and destruction occur concurrently. So that's talking eating, and that's talking sweeping. It's not talking about making firewood. It's not talking about, and it also applies to usages as well. And finally, the last discussion that we had is how do you transfer the Kedusha Shvius onto money? Does it have to be through Mekach, or can it be through Chilul? So again, in summary, in conclusion, Rav Ashi says that when it comes from the AB transaction, going from the original fruit to the money, only Derech Mekach, there's no debate. Only Derech Mekach. And then the only debate that takes place after that is the BC transaction. On the BC transaction and anything subsequent to that, BC, CD, DE, on any subsequent transaction, does it have to be Derech Mekach, or can it be done also through Derech Chilul? Rav Yochanan says that it can be done through Derech Chilul, and Rav Elazar says no. Even after the AB, it can only be done Derech Mekach. Okay. Generally speaking, a machlok between Rav Elazar and Rav Yochanan, we follow like Rav Yochanan, so I assume the halacha is like Rav Yochanan on this regard. Yeah, in other words, correct. The Lulav and Esrog that come from Eretz Yisrael subject to Shemitah, it gets much more complicated nowadays. We just scratched the surface. It's more complicated now.
Why do we follow the Tana Yachid?
Well, it's right. Why is our Mishnah right? In other words, our Mishnah, that's a very good question. Our Mishnah ignores the opinion of Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer. And our Mishnah adopts the position of a Tana Yachid. You're right. It's a good question. I don't know. Okay, Rabbi Yehuda and Asi obviously felt there to be a reason, and I don't know what it is. Okay, we are in Mem Aleph, Amud Aleph. We're at the Mishnah now. Birishona. In the base of Mikdash, let's read the Mishnah. Birishona, you lulav nita b'mikdash. Originally, the lulav was taken in the base of Mikdash Shiva for 7 days. Okay, I pointed this out in the beginning of the parak. Let's reiterate. Outside the base of Mikdash, so there's a mitzvah to take the lulav 1 day. Let's hear the pasuk. Ulakachtam lachem b'yom harishon. You take for yourself on the first day. Pre-etzadr kapos tamar manaf etzavas arve nachal. So the first half of the pasuk sounds like there's a mitzvah to do it on day one. And then how does the pasuk end? Usmachtem lifnei Hashem Elokeichem shivas yamim. And then you rejoice in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu for 7 days. So Rashi over here quotes the Sifra, Torah's Kohanim, and Rashi says, it's the first Rashi on the Mishnah, so that in the Beis HaMikdash, or let me say it a little bit more ambiguously, and I usually enjoy being clear, not less clear, but in the Mikdash, and you'll see why the ambiguity in just a moment, in the Mikdash, so there's a mitzvah to take Lulav and Esrog all 7 days min HaTorah. Outside the Beis HaMikdash, only day one. Okay, so now, Uve Medina Yom Echad, and outside of the Mikdash, you take the Lulav only 1 day. So now one wonders, wait a second, right? I see everyone else, myself included, taking Lulav and Esrog all 7 days of Sukkot. Why are we doing that? We live in South Florida. What's wrong with us? Okay, there's a long-winded answer to that question, but Mishecharav Beis HaMikdash, after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, Hiskin Rav Yochanan Zakeh Sheilulav Nitam B'Medina Shiva Zecher LeMikdash. So an enactment that was made by Rav Yochanan Ben Zakeh. Rav Yochanan Ben Zakeh, a survivor of the destruction of the Second Temple. The Gemara in Gittin goes through a great episode regarding Rav Yochanan Ben Zakeh and not only how he survives the destruction of the Second Temple, but basically how he perpetuates the Jewish people. But one of the things he does post-destruction is that he makes a number of enactments, this being one of them. It helps us remember that there once was a Beis HaMikdash. Shiyeh Yom HaNef Kulo Aser. And another enactment that was made by Rav Yochanan Ben Zakeh is that on the second day of Pesach, we call it Yom Tov Sheni, but we live in the Galus. Meaning, in Eretz Yisrael, the first day of Chol HaMoed, so that is the 16th day, or that day is significant because Omer. The carbon Omer is brought on the second day of Pesach. When there was a Beis HaMikdash, when can I eat all the grains that grew over the past year? Only after the carbon Omer is brought. In the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, when can I eat all the grains that grew? We don't have a Beis HaMikdash, there's not going to be a carbon Omer. The moment daybreak occurs. So, on the 16th day of Nisan, the moment daybreak occurs, Rav Yochanan Ben Zakeh says, I'm instituting another takana, which is that when you wake up on the 16th day, all those grains that you've been storing since this past year, up until this point in time, those grains are called chadash. Chadash aser min haTorah. Chadash is prohibited, the new grains. But once the 16th of Nisan comes, and without the Beis HaMikdash, we mean the morning of the 16th, you're allowed to enjoy all those grains. Those grains are no longer chadash, they're now yashan. Rav Yochanan Ben Zakeh, for reasons which we'll see in just a moment, says no. That on the 16th day of Nisan, as a gzera, as a rabbinic decree, we can't eat those grains until nighttime. For reasons the Gemara is going to explain to us. Take a look at Rashi. I'm not going to go through the Rashi right now. How do we know that the Omer? I'm sorry. The Chadash becomes permitted at daybreak when there's no Beis HaMikdash. Who said that? So you look at Rashi, and Rashi quotes the Psukim. And you'll forgive me. I'm not going to go through the Rashi right now. Minalan de Avdina Zecher LaMikdash. So I'm sorry. Before I start the Gemara, so Tosfos points out there were a number of takanas that were made by Rav Yochanan Ben Zakeh. Meaning, our Mishnah goes over two of them, right? And it's a little bit strange. Meaning, it's not strange to do the Lulav one now. We're learning the third Perek. It's the right time to discuss it. But why mention Yom HaNeif? So Tosa says, because they were enacted concurrently. And Tosa then points out, but there are a number of other Takanas of Yochanan Ben Zakeh, and why these two are a package deal. So Tosa says, I'm not totally clear on that, but okay. But anyway, these are not the only takanas of Rav Yochanan Ben Zakeh. We start with the Gemara, Menalan Davdina Zechel HaMikdash. First off, the Gemara wants to know this whole idea of Zechel HaMikdash. Like, where does that come from? Meaning, what is motivating Rav Yochanan Ben Zakeh to make takanas to remind us of the Beis HaMikdash? Damakar, the Gemara quotes a pasuk from Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu obviously was witness to the destruction of the Churban. Yirmiyahu, also the author of Eicha. So Kiale Arucha Lach Umimakosech Erpaech Num Hashem. So the pasuk in Yirmiyahu says that I'm gonna heal you, I'm gonna cure you, right? You're gonna be wounded, And HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises us that he will heal us. Ki nidche karulach. The nations of the world, they say, you're nidche. You've been cast off, you've been pushed off. Sion hi, dorish ein la. And as far as Sion is concerned, no one cares about Sion. No one's asking about Sion. That's the Navi. So the Gemara says, look, it's simple. And so, dorish ein la, michlal debay drisha. The fact that the Navi is lamenting the idea that no one's inquiring or asking about Sion, and no one's thinking about Sion, so therefore, we got to think about it. So it's up to us to think about it. It's interesting. There's going to be one reference this morning when you hear the Megillah. There'll be one reference to Yerushalayim. And in other words, the Megillah was written in in Shushan, right? One country over. So the Megillah was written in Shushan. It was written during the Galus, right? During the first Galus between Beis Mikdash Rishon and Sheni. But there's one reference to Tzion, to Yerushalayim. So it needs Drisha. So after the Chorban by Sheni, so Rav Yochanan Zakkai says, we need to remember constantly the Beis HaMikdash, and he made takanas to help us remember the Beis HaMikdash. V'shiyeh yomei neiv. And really now, from this point going forward, till the next Mishnah, we're going to be discussing now the Omer. Again, on the second day of Pesach, the first day of Chol HaMoed in Eretz Yisrael, 16th day of Nisan, so the Karban Omer is brought. And what that does is two things. Number one, it's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to bring the Karban Omer. Two, it's a matir. It permits all the grains that grew over the course of this year. Now it permits it. Permits the grains. The grains up until this point in time is considered chadash, it's considered new. And after the Karban Omer is brought, they're now yashan. They're quote unquote old. And now we're allowed to eat it. My taima. Now, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai says that after the destruction of the Second Temple, even though according to the strict letter of the law, we're allowed to eat those grains, the moment daybreak occurs, Rav Yochanan Zakkai says, no, we're not. We're only going to eat it at night. Meaning, after the 16th day has come and gone, the eve of the 17th, then and only then are we going to enjoy our new grains. My time, why did he make such a gzerim? Here you want a Beis HaMikdash. Because what's going to happen is as follows. The Beis HaMikdash will be built imminently. V'yomru ishtake milo achalnu be'er ha-mizrach. And we are creatures of habit. And even though we now have a brand new Beis HaMikdash, and the Geula has come, but we are just all creatures of habit. And last year, do you remember? I mean, I know we don't. But let's pretend like we remember. Last year, don't you remember how the morning of the 16th came, and we all enjoyed our grains, and we all treat ourselves to a breakfast of pancakes and waffles. Now, it is Pesach. So I say pancakes and waffles, I really mean matzah. Okay. Matzah pancakes and matzah waffles. Okay, but fine. In other words, you remember last year we made fresh matzah on the first day of Chol HaMoed Pesach, and we did so in the morning. So we're all creatures of habit. Well, if that's what we did last year, that's what we're doing this year. Hashanami nechal. Vinu lo yada dishtake de lo have beis hamikdash er mizrachiter. Hashadika beis hamikdash omer matir. And what the populace is not going to know, or not going to be sensitive to, is that last year we did not have the Beis HaMikdash, this year we do have the Beis HaMikdash. So last year, the daybreak was the matir, this year, the Omer is going to be the matir. Okay, when is the Beis HaMikdash actually being built? De'ivni Amos, when is it being built? Elam de'ivni b'shitzar, so the Gemara says, well, are we talking about the Beis HaMikdash being built on the 16th day of Nisan? Yes, the Gemara is entertaining that the Beis HaMikdash will be built in just but one day. I know, construction-wise, that's a little bit difficult to understand. I'll show you Rashi in just a moment, and that'll make this easier to understand. So let's say the Beis HaMikdash is built on the 16th day of Nisan. Harei hiter heir ha-mizrach. So the Gemara says, so why worry about that? Heir ha-mizrach, meaning this morning when we all woke up. Was there a Beis HaMikdash? No. So the daybreak was a matir. Even though later in the day the Beis HaMikdash was built. Elodiv nebechamisar. So the Gemara says, okay, the Beis HaMikdash is built on the 15th. Now, mind you, the 15th is what's called Yontif. I'll come back to that in just a moment. So the Elodiv Nebechamisa, okay, the Beis HaMikdash was built on the 15th. So Michatzos Hayom Al-Halon Tishtari. So the Gemara says, okay, but here's what I don't understand. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, you went a little too far. You told us that we can't eat Omer, I'm sorry, we can't eat Chadash until nighttime. Why? In other words, shouldn't you allow us to eat it at least at noon? or latest, I should say, at noon, because that's none. Go back to Menachos, and we learned it together in Menachos. Those people living far away from the Beis HaMikdash, they don't know when the Karban Omer is brought. Everyone look at your watches, synchronize your watches. By 12 noon, we'll all assume the Omer was brought. Those are Kohanim that are responsible to bring the Karban. The Kohanim know what they're doing. They're not lazy. By noon, we can all assume the Karban Omer is brought. So if the Beis HaMikdash was built on the 15th day, so great. Tonight, the night of the 16th, they'll harvest the Omer. They'll sift. They'll grind. They'll do other way around. They'll grind. They'll sift. They'll do everything. And then, noon. Why is Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai prohibiting us to eat the new grains until night of the 17th? Lefishein basin misatzim bo. I should have read that. Or, I'm sorry. The basin is not lazy. So the Gemara says, well, okay, you know when the Beis HaMikdash was built? The night of the 16th. Or, Bein HaShmashos of going from the 15th to the 16th. Rashi points out, it's basically the same point. In other words, right, let's just say like this. The night of the 16th. And so what? As Rashi explains, there's no time. We have to harvest the barley. We got to grind the barley. We got to sift the barley. There's a drying process somewhere in the middle. I don't know where. Then, in other words, there's not going to be enough time to bring it by noon. It probably will be offered sometime later in the day. Okay, and let's just quote perhaps one of the more famous Rashi's in this Masechta, and certainly one of the more interesting Rashi's, and that is the following. The Gemara has just spent about five lines of Gemara entertaining the idea that the Beis HaMikdash is going to be built either during the night or on Yontif. And Rashi is bothered by the simple fact that we know, Rashi quotes sources, it's a Gemara in Shavuos, that you are not allowed to build the Beis HaMikdash at night, and you're not allowed to override Shabbos and Yontif to build the Beis HaMikdash. How can the Gemara just have entertained an entire discussion about the Beis HaMikdash perhaps being built on the 15th day of Nisan? That's Yontif. Rashi writes, you're going to find this in the second to last line of Rashi, and Rashi writes, Hani Mili Binyan Habanu Bidei Adam. The temples that are built by us, so they're subject to these regulations of, they don't override Yontif, and you can't build it at night. Ava Mikdash Ha'asir. But the future Beis HaMikdash, the third Beis HaMikdash, Sha'anu Mitzapim, Banui U'Mishuchlalhu, Yigaleh V'Yavo Mishamayim. It's there, it's descending from Shamayim. Shenemar Mikdash Hashem, Konenu Yadecha. And then Rashi quotes a pasuk from Az Yashir. Okay. Obviously an interesting Rashi. And by the way, Tosos goes through the same discussion. Tosos also arrives at the same conclusion that the Beis HaMikdash Memher B'Yameinu is going to come down from Shamayim.
Also not on Friday or Shabbat either, right?
Correct. Right. There was another discussion we had back in Erevin. Right. Right. When can Eliyahu come to herald the arrival of the Mashiach?
What is that opinion?
I don't know. Right. In other words, this opinion of Rashi and Tosos is this. You know how accepted is this?
Does Rashi give us the year?
Maybe he may encrypt it. Okay. Amen. Amen. Rav Nachman Yitzchak Amar, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai b'shitas Rabbi Yehuda Amar. Let's just quickly finish up to the next Mishnah. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, I'm sorry. Let's have a new approach. Meaning up until now, what do we assume? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai made a gzera de rabbanan, which is that we're allowed to eat the new grains the moment the sun rises when we don't have a base of mikdash, but for, I would say, fear or concern, but those are the wrong adjectives, for expectation and hope that the Beis HaMikdash will be built. So therefore, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai says, you know what? We're not going to eat the Chadash until night, eve of the 17th. Good. As a Gzera Durabana. That was approach number one. The Gemara is going to go now over a second approach, which is Amar Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai b'shitas Rav Yehuda, Amar da Amar Minatora hu Aser. It is prohibited Minatora. Dichsiv, meaning it's not a Gzera Durabana. That's actually the Din Daraisa. The Torah says, Ad etzem hayom hazeh, ad itzumo shel yom, till the day. Itzumo shel yom means the day. Meaning, not the night of, not the morning of, but the entirety of the day. Vikasavar ad v'ad bichlal. And going back to a classic debate that occurs a couple of times throughout Shas, and that is, when we say up to, do we mean up to and including? Rav Yehuda says, yes, up to and including. So in other words, without a base of Mikdash, with a base of Mikdash, Karban Omer. Karban Omer is a matter. Without a base of Mikdash, up to and including the 16th day of Nisan. So v'ha miflag palik alav, the Gemara says, now, well, hold on 1 second. What do you mean? Rav Yochum and Zakkai is following Rav Yehuda. They're arguing. Gemara says, I'll show you a braisa. Mishchar beis hamikdash shikim Rav Yochum and Zakkai shei yom hanef kolo aser, that Rav Yochum and Zakkai made a takana, he made an institution. Amar lo Rav Yehuda, Rav Yehuda says to Rav Yochum and Zakkai, what are you talking about? V'alo min ha-toru aser. What do you mean you're making an institution? Aser min ha-toru dechsev, adetam hayom hazeh, aritzum ha-shayom. So, you see in this braisa, they're arguing. What are you telling me that Rav Yochum and Zakkai is following Rav Yehuda? So Rav Yehuda, who the katai, Rav Yehuda didn't understand Rav Yochum and Zakkai. Who's ever midar rabbanan kamar? Velohi midar raisa kamar. It was a miscommunication. Rav Yochum and Zakkai actually agrees with Rav Yehuda, according to the second approach. Vaha hitkin kamar, small problem. It says hiskin, which usually is a reference to institute, which means a rabbinic institution. Mahitkin darsh vehitkin. Now, in this case, hitkin means that he expounded psukim in the Torah, and then he instituted based on his way of understanding the psukim in the Torah. Okay, we finished the Shemitah discussion, discussed the two takanas, Rav Yochum and Zakkai. The one is that outside the base of Mikdash, we take lulav for all 7 days. And two is that on the 16th day, we're not allowed to eat chadash until after the 16th day comes and goes, based on the takana of Rav Yochum and Zakkai, and according to the second approach, based on the drasha of Rav Yochum and Zakkai.